And a good Tuesday, everybody. Welcome in, Chase and Michelle. 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, the reporter, Nick Kieser with you on this Tuesday. Hope you're having a fantastic start to your day. We have a national champion in men's and women's college basketball now. UConn cutting down the nets last night after pretty much a no contest. It was a battle for a little bit, but UConn pulled away 76-59 to win the national championship. We will get into that. We will get into the Titans, the Predators, in action last night and back at it tonight, but it's a beautiful day. Michelle, how are we doing?
You know, the weather is beautiful outside. So that was a nice sighting this morning when I walked out and I didn't have a coat on and felt great. Got some great weather. Stayed up a little too late watching the rest of that game because, you know, I just kept kind of holding on that it would get close at some point. San Diego State got to, there's a 5-point margin, and yeah, then UConn hits a three and then eventually pulls away with about 4 minutes left. But I feel like the whole game, I was like, okay, there they go. So close. Like, they could barely break the 10-point margin. They got it to five, and then UConn ultimately pulled away. One of the most dominant performances in the tournament, you know, in history, not the most, but I mean, what a run from this UConn team. Fifth championship in 25 years, three different coaches. Pretty incredible what they did last night, and they will be your new national champions. Yeah, but I'm sad because basketball's over, so it's a little bittersweet.
I know. Well, you got the NBA. I know it's not the same, but, you know, you still have that. But what was it? San Diego State went on like a 9-0 run, something like that.
Yeah.
And that's how they were able to cut into it. And when I was watching the game, I was hanging out with Jonathan Hutton, actually, and I looked at him and I said, oh, this is getting interesting, because mm-hmm. It really hadn't been throughout the game. And then, you know, like a minute later, we go, never mind. UConn has turned it back on. I mean, they were that team in the tournament, even though they were a 4 seed. It was just like, I felt like none of their games were close.
Nope, none of them were.
Yeah, and so they earned it, and they flexed their muscles. And but I thought that, you know, we talked about this some yesterday, that overall this was an exciting tournament, and we'll get into that more. But I do have to – we have to do something, because I want to make sure I heard this correctly. The final score was 76-59. This was Jared Stillman at the end of his show yesterday giving his final prediction.
I am putting out my championship game score, Connecticut 77-59 tonight.
How about that? 1 point off.
Still wasn't
That's pretty
right,
impressive,
though.
Jared.
Yeah, I saw that on, I think he posted it on some social media this morning. Yeah, I mean, they, UConn played their game and they lucked out, because San Diego State was very, very bad in the first half, just missing shot after shot after shot. I'm surprised they weren't down by more, but yeah, good prediction by you, Jared. I didn't hear that.
You got to give credit where credit is due.
Hey, he didn't get it right. He didn't get it right. He got it close.
He didn't get it right, but he got pretty close.
Does that count when you're gambling?
It depends on if you're using the spread.
I meant betting a score.
No, he was 1 point off. But I was still impressed by it. I mean, look, if you had said that, I would give you the same amount of credit. So I thought – I know today he's going to whine about being 1 point off, but – it's all good. So now what? Now that UConn has won the national championship, what does this mean moving forward? Now that, as Michelle said, she got her one shining moment. I know you enjoyed that. And then the season came to an end. This was Dan Hurley reflecting on winning the national championship with UConn.
Well, Dan Hurley, you are a national champion. This has been such a journey, decades long, since you were a little kid. What's going through that head of yours as you think back to what you accomplished?
I think it hit me around the, you know, 105 to go, up 14. I think I finally let myself start thinking about, you know, what it meant. And just to do it, for me, it's like fulfilled promises that I made to UConn before I took the job, that I could put something together to get it back. And then the promises you made to these great players, Andre Jackson, Adamus Sanogo, Jordan Hawkins, Klingon, Caravan, that, like, if you come here, we could do this. And to be able to deliver on things you promised to a bunch of people feels great.
That was Dan Hurley last night after the win. So let me ask you this, Michelle, you being the college basketball savant that you are, they are, you mentioned the fifth title in 25 years with three different coaches for UConn, which is very, very impressive. They're fourth all time with tied with Duke and Indiana with their titles, with five titles. But I feel like we look at Duke in a completely different light, and it's probably because they have one of the best, or had one of the best basketball coaches of all time, Coach K, legendary coach. Their titles are more together, I guess, or maybe there's some recency bias there. But I just, for whatever reason, I look at Duke in a different light. And then Indiana hasn't been Indiana in a long time. Like, they have not been that basketball powerhouse in a long time. And then UConn, as we talked about yesterday, is kind of up and down. Like, they will win a national title and be one of the best, and then they may not even make the tournament for a few years, and then they come back. So how do we kind of view UConn, even though, you know, when you look at the scorecard of rankings of all-time programs, they're fourth all-time?
Yeah, I mean, when you decide to define blue blood, it a lot of people define it differently. And, you know, we were talking about this morning, and I said, well, I asked Joe the question. I said, can you play your way into becoming a blue blood? He said, well, yeah, Duke did it. In the 80s, they weren't a blue blood. And then you have a coach like Coach K, and you take over the program. And, you know, he's won five national championships. He's obviously had a lot of Final Fours, Sweet 16s. But he was able to play his way into becoming a blue blood. But I also look at, too, how much college basketball has changed within the last 40 years. Coach K was able to, you know, win five titles. We've talked about Wooden at UCLA, won 10 in 11 years. But, I mean, when you add the transfer portal, when you add NIL, when you just add the AAU circuit and recruiting and how college basketball programs as a whole have expanded. I mean, programs like Tennessee, like Alabama, like these weren't big college basketball programs. You know, when Kay was winning them all and Roy Williams at UNC. But I look at what this UConn team has done in the last 25 years. And, you know, if you add women's basketball to it, I mean, they are the most dominant basketball school. Sure. When you talk women's and men's, I think you could put some other teams in there. Baylor as of recent, you know, you could throw Louisville in there. They've had some good women's teams, Notre Dame. But, you know, when you look at UConn, I think the head-scratching part is it wasn't done under one coach. It was done under three different coaches, three different regimes. Whereas, you know, when Duke, it was Kay. He had won all those championships. He created that Duke brand of basketball. But I look at UConn and what they've done in the last 25 years, three different head coaches, you know, five national championships. And if you don't talk about them as a blue blood, I mean, I think that this should solidify them as a college basketball blue blood. I mean, people don't consider Villanova one.
No.
But, I mean, look at what they've done.
Sure. And I think, to your point about the three different head coaches, that makes it impressive. But I'll also give Jim Calhoun the credit for building the program. I mean, he was there a long time. So he kind of set the foundation. And then Ollie got one, and now obviously Hurley. I mean, and you know, they've had some lean years after Calhoun retired and then came out of retirement with St. Joseph. But, you know, he I felt like set the foundation for them to build off of, and they've at times struggled to keep it going. But, you know, the fact that they can rebound like they are, like they have, and win another national title, I would agree with you. I mean, I think, you know, and when I'm looking at brackets and talking about March Madness and UConn, you know, comes up, I always view UConn. Okay, yeah, they're one of the, you know, they're always deserving of the respect. I don't know if I've called them a blue blood, but I think you're right. I mean, I think they have earned that that title now.
I mean, think about it. They just passed Kansas with amount of national championships. Men's basketball.
That's crazy to think about.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that is a crazy stat, because if you want to weigh what is a blue blood based off national championships, I mean, and think about it. Kansas just won their most recent last year, which they would have been tied then, and now UConn has surpassed them. So how do you define it? That'd be an interesting question for our listeners. How do you define a blue blood? Which schools are blue bloods? Will you add Villanova in there? Will you add UConn in there? Or do you just have the traditional Kentucky, Kansas, UNC, Duke? And honestly, some people have UCLA, and they haven't won a championship in forever.
Right. But they did so many. They won so many under Wooden that they put them up there. But that's a great question. 615-737-1025. How do you define a blue blood when it comes to college basketball? Because I have the list pulled up of the most championships of all time. I think it's interesting when you know what Michelle just said, like with UCLA. How do you still view UCLA? We'll discuss that coming up. You can weigh in, 615-737-1025. That is our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And what does this mean for basketball in the tournament moving forward? Did we love this madness, or could we see some changes? We'll also discuss that. It's Chase and Michelle here on a Tuesday, 1025, 106.3 The Game.
One thing I learned through all of this is everybody has a dream. And everybody has a story to tell. Just try to find that story. Be kind.
You told it better than most, let me tell you.
Can I tell you one other thing? I mean this, not to try to play off level, friends, but to you, everybody in the college game, my CBS family, my family, all the viewers, thank you for being my friend.
There you go. That's how it sounded last night. Jim Nance signing off as a college basketball announcer. Of course, he'll continue with the NFL and gets to go to Augusta later this week with the Masters, but had announced before the tournament that this would be his last NCAA tournament, and did a fantastic job. Nashville zone, as he does live here now, but going to be weird not having Jim Nance call some basketball games for CBS. Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063 The Game, broadcasting live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. Taking your calls and texts at 615-737-1025. How do we define a blue blood now that UConn has won its fifth national title in basketball, in men's basketball, I should say? As Michelle pointed out, we all know the success of Gina Auriemma and the women's team. Mm-hmm. But looking at them as a basketball school overall, men's and women's, I think is pretty cool. But how do we define them as a blue blood? I would say the answer is yes. And if you look at on the NCAA, and they've already updated this on their NCAA website to reflect, you know, how many national championships a program has. UCLA, obviously, number one with 11, won all those titles under Wooden. Michelle, could you tell us number two?
Dun, 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 the Kentucky Wildcats.
Kentucky with 8, North Carolina with 6, and then Duke, Indiana, UConn with 5. Now, I got a text because after them is Kansas with 4. Mm-hmm. I got a text from a friend of mine, Max, not Max Hers, who used to work here, who is a huge Kentucky fan. Or not Kentucky, Kansas. Kansas fan. Thank you.
I like him.
And says, Kansas is better, Chase. Us KU fans claim 6 titles because we had 2 back in like the 20s or something that they don't count now.
Come on. No.
I'm just the messenger. So, Max, I'm putting that out there for you.
Max, but I hate to break it to you, but no. Nope. doesn't count.
No.
If it's not documented, it doesn't count.
But, okay, so, like, what else is interesting is I think blue bloods became subjective for a while. I mean, I still consider UCLA one. I mean, I picked UCLA to win it this year. They just they haven't won in a while, but I still think that they are. John Wooden established that. Kentucky, obviously. North Carolina, Duke, obviously. You know, even though Indiana hadn't won it in a while, I still put them in there. UConn now, Kansas. You asked about Villanova. They got three titles now. I don't know. I'd be curious of how people view them. Did when Pitino was at Louisville, did we kind of view them as a blue blood, even though they've only got two titles, two or one and a half, however you want to look at it, with violations.
Two with but, an I mean, asterisk.
Yeah, but I mean I know I looked at them when Pitino was there and I gave them a different amount of respect than I do now.
No, I completely agree. And, you know, another program we can throw in there, and I know they only have one title, but Syracuse for all those years.
Yeah.
You know, Jim Boeheim, over the last probably five-ish years, the program hasn't been too successful. But, I mean, in their heydays, I mean, they were a team constantly successful in the tournament. And I wouldn't consider them a blue blood. I wouldn't consider Louisville a blue blood. But, you know, they were teams that definitely competed and were solid programs. Obviously, both of them have fallen off a little bit as of late. But I think a texter, Glenn from Greenbrier, encapsulates it pretty good on our text line. He said the four blue bloods he has are UK, Kansas, UNC, and Duke. He said these are the traditional powers that have sustained success over multiple decades. UCLA and Indiana only had a few decades where they were good, same as UConn. UK has won a natty in every decade except the 60s, 80s, and 2000s since 42, bluest of the blue bloods.
Then he says,
Kansas loves to claim pre-NCAA titles such as NIT, LOL.
Well, I mean, the NIT at one time was the national championship. So, I mean, I get that.
No, but you're good. Another Texer Texan says, I grew up in North Carolina, so we've always known Duke and UNC to be blue blood teams. But I define blue bloods as the ones we all know who will most likely make the tournament. So that's interesting because I think the way I view it is, you know, the teams, similar to Glenn, the teams that have sustained success over multiple decades. I still put UCLA in there because, no, they haven't won it recently, but they've had some really good teams. I mean, this year's team was really, really good. A couple years ago, they were in the Final Four not too long ago. And Indiana's an interesting one, though, Chase, because they haven't really done much lately at all. I mean, I would UNC over. UNC's had really good teams as of recent, whereas I can't remember. I mean, Indiana was supposed to have a deep run. They actually lost to UConn or Miami early in the tournament this year. But I would start to put UConn in it. I would start to classify them as blue blood. I mean, they have done something that only two blue bloods have ever done, and that's win five national championships in a 25 years. And in addition to that, their program has sustained success with coaching changes.
Right. And that's what's impressive is, you know, like that's the perfect tie into UCLA. UCLA was never able to take that championship type success from Wooden to anyone else, you know, and keep it going. Whereas UConn, you look at UConn, Jim Calhoun got it started, laid the foundation, and then they've had two other guys win since then. North Carolina, obviously we know Dean Smith, and then Roy Williams comes in there and does his thing. You know, Kentucky has won with Pitino, Tubby Smith, even though that was Pitino's team, and then Cal.
Yeah, they have five different coaches.
Yeah, and then going back to Adolph Rupp, obviously. But so, yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly something to be said for that. Matt on the text line said, how about Florida with back-to-back? I view that as, like, those teams, those Florida teams that Billy Donovan have are some of the best basketball teams of all time.
All time.
But that was it. It was that, you know, little stretch in that 2-year span where they won back-to-back. But I would take those teams with, you know, Joakim Noah leading the way and those Billy Donovan teams and put them up against anybody because those were fun teams to watch. But I don't say Florida's a blue blood because that was it.
Yeah, no, I agree, Chase. I think you could probably take those teams and put them up with some of the best college basketball teams in history. Like, there's no doubt what they did was incredibly hard, incredibly challenging. But I think when we talk about blue bloods and we talk about dominance in college basketball, you have to sustain, oh my gosh, I cannot say this word. I've repeated it 10 times. Sustain the success, whether it be over coaches, over, you know, a long period of time. You know, we talk about Coach K. He created Duke in what they are known as, you know, a college basketball powerhouse. But he didn't only do it for a short period of time. He sustained the success over 40 years because, you know, he won 5 titles. But, I mean, they were constantly a threat in the tournament, making Sweet 16s, making Elite Eights, making Final Four runs. And I look at the same thing with UNC. And, you know, everybody can be like, well, Michelle, Cal hasn't won a title since, you know, 2012. And I get that. But I think, too, it's the constant appearance in the Sweet 16, in the Elite Eight, in the Final Four, because what we saw John Wooden do at UCLA all those years ago, it's incredibly hard, and it won't ever be done again. I think I can say that pretty confidently. No one will ever win 10 national championships in 11 years in college basketball because of how much it has changed and how much the game, you can rebuild a roster in 1 year. Look at Kim Mulkey, for example. I mean, doing what he did is so incredibly impressive, but I give a little bit of a disclaimer because college basketball as a whole has expanded so much and there's so many more relevant programs now. And then you add NIL and then you add the transfer portal. And that's why I think we're seeing more schools. You know, we are open to the conversation of adding more schools into this. Like, I have no problem adding a UConn and or Villanova is a question mark still because, yes, with Jay Wright, but let's see what they can do you know, after him. They made the NIT this year. But, I mean, I don't think it's a closed-off group. I think you can play your way into being talked about as a blue blood. And I think UConn has won their way into being talked about as a blue blood.
615-737-1025. Chris, Tim, we'll get to you coming up next. So hang with us. If you want to weigh in on this conversation, how do you classify a blue blood? Do you have UConn in that list now? We will continue this discussion here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds fans, hang out tonight before the Preds game at the Superbook Lounge at Landshark Bar and Grill, Margaritaville on Broadway. With us, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. You can place your bets with Superbook and enjoy great food and drink specials. Plus, enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Chase and Michelle here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game, taking your calls and your text, 615-737-1025, on how you view UConn now that they've won their 5th national title. Are they a blue blood? I'm going to get to a text in my personal line in just a second.
Ooh, the people have spoken, Chase.
Oh, they've spoken, but when I throw this at you, it's going to make you think, because it made me think.
Okay.
So let's go to the phones, 615-737-1025. Chris in Atlanta has been waiting patiently. He's up first. Chris, welcome in.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, guys. How's it going this lovely Tuesday morning? So I think when we look at this term blue blood, I think we got to think of it two ways. One, yes, you got to look at the number of titles. But two, you know, like you guys have been talking about the past few minutes, it's this concept of sustained success. I mean, yes, Duke, you know, it has won all these titles, but if you really look at it, they won them mostly in the Krzyzewski years. However, if you look at it from the whole picture, like, they were an NCAA tournament mainstay even before Coach K got there. And it's almost the same with Kentucky. Yes, Kentucky has won most of its titles in the Patino, the Tubby Smith, and, you know, the John Calipari eras. They have also had success even through the Adolph Rupp years. So it's the sense of, you know, are they winning all these titles? Are they having the same success? Now, UConn, I'm getting close to saying yes, they're a blue blood. They've had this sense of recent titles, and that's fine. I mean, most of them were during the Jim Calhoun era, but like you guys have said, they've also won titles under these new coaches. But that amount of success is sort of limited really to the 80s and part of the, you know, to now. And so that concept of sustained success is sort of limited. But if you look at Kansas, UNC, UCLA, I mean, yes, UCLA, they are the dominant college men's program in terms of titles.
Mm-hmm.
But their concept of sustained success is kind of fleeting now. But right now, they're getting back to what they were. So, and that's the thing. You have to look at it as two ways, this concept of titles and concept of sustained success. It's sort of like this conversation on, you know, what makes it, who was the greatest quarterback of all time? There's different limiting factors. You know,
yeah.
You know, Tom Brady is the GOAT of our era. But is he the GOAT of all time? We don't know. Like, there's so many conditions that, you know, we could factor into. But, yeah, that's what I would say. In terms of college basketball, you have to have this concept of number of titles and success. I mean, heck, Michigan State only has two national titles. But could they be considered a blue blood just because they have that sense of sustained success?
Mm, that's an interesting one.
I just don't know.
Yeah.
So, and that's the thing that we have to argue here.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, guys.
A lot of stuff to think. That the other part of this too is I think it is okay. Like, you know, UCLA had, you know, a lot of success under John Wooden, and, you know, Kentucky is the best example. Kentucky has been a program that was established a long time ago to be a championship caliber program, and they've done it. And, you know, as we've discussed, it's hard to win the tournament. Even though they, you know, you look at them and go, well, they only have 8 titles in their history. Okay. But they're whatever era you're in,
mm-hmm.
and about Kentucky. I think, though, it is okay to have a program be established and then hang on to that success like UConn was in the 80s with Jim Calhoun.
Mm-hmm.
And they've carried that on until now. So, I think it kind of goes both ways. Let's get Tim real quick. Tim, welcome in.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good.
Good.
I think if you're going to take in lumping women's college basketball with the men's, as far as determining a blue blood, I believe then you got to throw Connecticut at the top of that list.
Yeah.
Being that they've had two dominant programs for so long, and, well, they're the only team to win the national championship, both men and women, in the same year, twice.
That's true.
So if you're going to do that, you have to lump them in there.
Okay. Great point.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah. Okay, so go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, if you're, I think for so long we have only focused on men's basketball because, you know, for a while there were only a few women's programs who were so dominant. We talked about this yesterday, Chase. UConn, the Lady Vols. But now seeing so many more women's basketball programs become competitive and the sport just growing as a whole. And we talk about Baylor. There's a program who've won it in men's and women's. You know, I think that's a little bit harder to have just because we have a lot more history with these men's programs. And now women's basketball, it's still not quite there with men's because it's still not fully caught up. But, I mean, if you're talking men's and women's, yeah, you put UConn at the top of that list, no doubt.
No, but did you see the ratings?
9.9 mil. And they didn't even have them in a primetime slot, Chase.
I know, but that was fantastic.
Yeah,
like, I loved that. Like, I loved that so many people tuned in. Up 103%, peaked at 12.6 million, most viewed college event ever on ESPN+.
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome. So congrats to the LSU and to women's basketball in Iowa and everybody being involved. All right, real quick, let me get to my text.
Yeah, I want to hear this.
From Ricky. And he made me think when we were having this conversation, because I said, how do you view UConn now? You know, he's listening. We're having this talk, and he says, "Are they a national brand?"
Yes.
And he goes, "When you talk Kentucky, you have fans all across America. Think about this. I could go to San Diego, California, or you could go to San Diego, California, wearing a Kentucky shirt, and you're probably going to run into a Kentucky fan."
Mm-hmm.
Can the same be said for UConn?
100%.
See, I'm going to say no.
100%.
As a national brand?
Yeah. And I will say, you know what? A lot of that has to do with their women's program. I 100% think it's a national. I mean, you think of UConn, and the first thing you think of is basketball. That's all you think of. When you say Kentucky, yeah, you think of basketball, SEC. When you say, like, what do you think of when you say a school's name? What is the first thing you think of when I say UConn?
Gino Auriemma.
Basketball, right?
Yeah. But I mean, like, when you say UConn, Gino is the first person that pops in my head.
Yeah, and I'll give the women, like, the women's. That's why
Diana Taurasi.
Yeah, Sue Bird. I mean, the huge, and yeah, they might be more on the women's side because what they've done is so incredible. You know, 11 national championships, but the men having five, I think a lot of times too, we look at basketball and we think UConn women's basketball just because what they've done is so incredible. But I mean, this men's team, I mean, five national championships, they are in that, they are right there in that conversation. I think, you know, another point that goes with all of this, Chase, Matt in Nashville texts in and says, to be a true blue blood, I think there has to be a period in your program's history that qualifies as a dynasty.
That's interesting.
And I get that because how much have we talked about how hard what Wooden did? How hard was that to win all of those championships? How hard is what Kay did in his amount of time at Duke, right? You know, Kentucky over their different coaches. You know, Villanova with Jay Wright specifically, all of the championships they won in his period of time there. So I think when you look at it from that perspective, it kind of adds another layer, like, can you point to a period in time where your team was considered a dynasty in college right. basketball?
And there's not many that can say that.
No.
I mean, Kentucky, obviously, Carolina, Duke,
UCLA.
I mean, UConn definitely had that time. Indiana, you know, even though Louisville technically has – Three.
Sorry, Junie. They have 80, yeah. 86, and 2013. But I told him to listen to this point I was about to make is a dynasty. Can you consider Louisville a dynasty in college basketball? They won one in 80, 86, 2013. You know, the gap is huge. And then what have they been as of recent in the last 10 years?
No, I think they could have been if all that stuff with Patino hadn't gone down.
Well,
they probably could have been. But
he's not their coach anymore. I don't consider
them to be a dynasty.
Do you consider this UConn in the last 25 years to be a dynasty?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think they had when were the titles with Calhoun? I think they had a run where
99.
Yeah,
I know it was one. His last one was 2011, and whatever the other year was in the middle of that.
Let's see. I got it right here. 99, 04, 11, 14, 23. I'd say so.
Yeah, so 14 was Ollie, and then obviously 23, yeah. Hurley.
Yeah, but I would say I would put that in there. I would say so. Tim in Jackson wants to weigh in real quick. Tim, welcome in.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, y'all were talking a minute ago, and I think Chase said that he wasn't sure you would put UCLA in there. If you look at the last 25 years, how many has Kentucky won?
25 years?
Two or three?
Okay. So everything before that was like Kentucky. I mean, was like UCLA. You see what I'm saying? Right now, in the last 25 years, UConn's the most dominant team in college basketball.
I mean,
and
yeah.
I'm
not going to argue that. I mean, I would say Duke's probably in that conversation.
Like I said, if you're not considering UCLA, and they won 11 straight. To me, there's no team ever going to repeat that. Never. It'll never happen.
Tim, quick question for you.
Okay.
So the interesting thing about UConn, though, is yes, they've won the five titles in the last 25 years, but there have been multiple years in a row in between there that they've missed the tournament or they've been out in the first round. Do you weigh that into the conversation?
You probably could, but then you've got to look. Kentucky's, they won a lot of theirs back when Adolph Rupp was there and back earlier. And I guarantee you it was easier to win then than it is today.
Yeah, no.
Yep. Think about that.
Yeah.
And it was easier when Wooden won those 11 because you don't have the athletes you've got today. you take a team today, it's harder to win it than ever. And that's kind of what I'm saying about UConn. UConn has won five in the last 25 years, when it's harder to win the national championship right now than it's ever been in history.
I think that's a great point, Tim.
Yeah. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks for the call. And to that point, you know, with 5 and 25 years now, as our same Kansas fan has pointed out, Kentucky had 3 in 27 years.
Why he said 25. I said 2, but 3. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you look at in the last 32 years, or give or take, that's where Duke got all 5 of their titles.
Correct.
Because they didn't win their first title until 91, when Coach K really got that thing humming.
Yeah, and Carolina
has 4 in that time span. So, I mean, I look, it's a fun conversation.
It's so fun. And then, you know, you can go a layer further, which I went there for a second. Like, do you weigh in that, yeah, UConn's won 5 titles in 25 years, but there's been, you know, 5 out of 6 years they haven't made the tournament, right? And then you have programs like Duke, UNC, Kentucky, who constantly and consistently, you know, will make Sweet 16s, will make Elite 8s, Final 4s, you know, add Villanova in there. Like, how much do you also weigh that? Yeah, they won 5 championships, which I would take as a fan, but has there been that consistency year in and year out in the tournament?
Fun conversation. Appreciate the participation from all of you. We'll get back into this a little later in the show, but coming up next, Predators fall 5-1 to Dallas last night. We'll check in with our man Max Herz, as we always do on Tuesday, get his thoughts on that and their game tonight against Vegas, here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
It's time for the Daily Power Play.
And the score! A power play goal for the Predators.
Covering the Predators and the NHL.
With a shot that stopped by Searles.
Now on Chase and Michelle.
Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, Nick Kieser with you. Predators fall 5-1 to Dallas last night, but they have a quick turnaround. They're back at it tonight at Bridgestone Arena against the Vegas Golden Knights in a must-win situation. Vegas wins last night in a shootout against Minnesota, but the Predators desperately needing points to stay in the hunt. Let's say hello to Max Herz, who is on the line with us. Of course, we'll have pre- and post-game for you tonight, with pre-game starting at 6 o'clock. Max, not what they needed last night, but it just shows you that Dallas has something to play for, too, as they're still fighting to win the Central Division.
Yeah, it's a really tough last couple of weeks for the Preds, looking at what we still have left in the season. You're only playing teams ahead of you in the standings, and the way they've got the playoff format now, I'm not crazy about this format, but I'll tell you what, the way things are lining up this year, it actually fits the league really well, because everybody other than the Bruins has something to play for. The Central Division top three are really tight at the top, and the way they have the 1, 2, and 3 in this playoff format, which again, I usually hate, but this year it's good because the Wild, the Avs, and the Stars are all fighting for either home ice against a wild card team, home ice against one of the other three teams at the top of the Central, and one of them is going to have to go on the road. So Preds play all three of those teams. They have a lot to play for. Golden Knights lead the Pacific right now. They need to keep winning to stay atop the Pacific ahead of the Kings. The Hurricanes will be here on Thursday. They have the second most points in the league, but the Devils are right on their heels. So everybody's got something to play for. Predators are only playing teams that are ahead of them. But the good part about it is they will get a crack at the two teams directly in front of them, the Jets and the Flames, on the road over the weekend. And before that, the Jets will host the Flames on Wednesday. So there's going to be kind of some cannibalism in the wild card spots, with teams fighting for points. So the Predators' playoff dream is certainly still alive, but they almost definitely will need to beat either the Jets or the Flames, or both, on that 2-game road trip.
Max Herz joins us. He'll have pregame coverage for you starting tonight. Max, you know, looking at this stretch of games the Predators have ahead of them, David Poile came on with us this morning and said, you know, the hardest part for this team right now is producing offensively. What do you think would be, you know, the biggest point of emphasis as they head into tonight's game and then just this next big stretch of games up until the end of the season?
Yeah, and it's definitely nothing new with the way they've had to play with the personnel that they're missing. They're missing their entire top line. They're missing a really underrated top six piece in Yusuf Parsonen. Mm-hmm. And then they're also missing some of their D who generate a lot of offense, Roman Josi and Alex Carrier, and now Jeremy Lauzon's out too, plus Cole Smith. So they're missing guys who have played in most of the games this season, and the new group has done a good job to win as many games as they have, and they've won a lot of 2-1, 3-1, 3-2, and that's kind of how they have to win right now. And I think in a game like last night, where I didn't think they got thoroughly outplayed by the Stars just capitalized on most of their chances. I thought that game was a little closer than it felt, especially through two. I mean, it didn't feel like the Preds deserved to be down 3-0 after two in that game. Mm-hmm. And the reasons they were down, John Hines said after the game, just giveaways that led to rush chances and also took some penalties too. So it definitely puts pressure on the team that they need to play closer to perfect than usual to have a chance against some of these top teams. But you can't give them that many power play chances, especially teams like the Stars who have great stars on the power play. And you can't give them too many odd man rushes either. And the Preds are going to have to start cashing in on some of their rushes too. Predators have had some good transition chances, but they haven't been able to score on most of those. So, and we saw that a little bit last night as well. So Predators are going to need some of those rush goals to fall for them. And they're just going to need more than one or two goals a game if they want to compete with these type of teams.
Max, taking a look at the team currently constructed, so many veteran guys either got traded off by the deadline or have been injured these last couple of weeks. When you take a look at a guy like Ryan McDonagh, who joined the team this year, how beneficial has he been to some of the younger guys in the locker room, especially as they're getting into a period of time right now where a lot of these younger guys haven't been in this position, and him just being a veteran in the league and voice in the locker room?
Yeah, he's been great. I really don't even want to think about what this Preds season looks like without him, especially with Roman Josi out the last couple weeks. He's been a captain for the team in every way, and he's of course been a captain before in the NHL. He's been a really valuable player, and there are a lot of teams that would have wanted him, and the Predators got him because David Poile had managed the salary cap the way he did and did well to do so and got him this summer. And I mean, man, between the intangible leadership and what it's meant to this team over the last month or so, and also the unbelievable defense he's played, the unbelievable penalty kill he's played, the way that he flips possession on its head in so many aspects of the game defensively, whether it's slowing down transitions or rush chances, making steals on the penalty kill, picking off passes, net front defense, both at the penalty kill and even strength. I mean, there's an argument that he's the Predators' most valuable skater this year, and I would be happy to be at the front of the line making that argument.
Max, I just got word during this interview that you and Hal Gill will be the third defense pairing tonight, so good luck in your NHL debut.
I love how everyone keeps making this joke, first of all, because it makes Hal squirm, which is funny, but also, like, we have a defenseman who's never played an NHL game on the payroll. His name is Jake Livingstone, and I'm very excited to see him play soon. So don't call Hal Gill yet, because Jake Livingstone is hopefully going to get in there at some point.
It does make Hal Gill squirm, that is for sure. And anytime we can do that, it's a good thing. Max, appreciate it as always. We'll be listening tonight at 6 o'clock, and hopefully the Predators can get 2 points at home against the Vegas Golden Knights.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Max.
Max Hurst, pre- and post-host for us here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game and the Predators Radio Network. And we'll have great coverage starting at 6 o'clock. Coming up next, let's talk some Titans, because they continue to be interesting right now with all the draft talk and what they could do. Could they take this quarterback or that quarterback or whatever? We'll discuss that coming up in the 10 o'clock hour here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.